Welcome back into Michelle and Junie. You can stream us live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME for multiple opportunities to win some cash on the playoff games that we have going on right now. But Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle Knezvik, Miss Continental USA, as she is helping Ryan from Chicago move down to his new home and location in New Orleans. Michelle, we will miss you. But Keyser, I teased this beforehand because over the weekend, I talked to somebody who is close to Treylon Burks, and I got some interesting tea.
Okay.
Some of which of what we talked about was him basically telling me a lot of what Treylon had said in his press conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go into what Treylon Burks said about him and what he is elected to do in this offseason.
You mentioned your breathing, how much calibrating the asthma and the weather and all of that last year. I imagine it was much more difficult than you expected. How much have you kind of figured out everything now? And
I would just say that's why I've been here, just making sure that I'm running in the heat. When I do get that feeling, I know how to control it now. Just being here with Todd and running with him out there, or running with the strength coaches. Frank doing a good job of, managing what I'm doing and not overdoing something. So it just all goes back to me being here throughout the whole offseason and getting that under control.
That was Treylon Burks when asked about his breathing going into this season. He's just dealing with asthma. He didn't come into camp in shape last year. He wasn't ready to go, and I felt like that really set him back with his rookie campaign. So, Keyser, what I heard from this source who is close to Treylon is that he has been working diligently this offseason and that he's got an edge to him based off of what happened last season. He knows the comparisons between him and AJ. He knows that he's going to be the focal point of this offense, and that if he doesn't step up, it is going to impact the receiver room, the offense entirely. But one interesting note that I did hear from this source is that Treylon Burks wants consistency in the quarterback room this offseason. He says that that is key to the development of this offense, and he doesn't want to see a lot of turnover. If it's a switch in the season, mm-hmm. and it's early in the season, it's understandable, especially with, Will Levis being drafted in the second round, Malik Willis. He's got another offseason to see if he can improve and compete in this quarterback room. But what this source told me was that the quarterback that he really favors is Malik Willis.
Okay.
So he likes Malik Willis. They were roommates together in rookie minicamp when they both came in last year, and that he has been working out with Malik Willis a lot this offseason. And we've talked to Malik Willis's quarterback coach. He's reached out to Michelle and I based off of some things that we were saying. He kind of wanted to clarify, kind of give his side of the story about how much work Malik has been doing. Malik hasn't been on social media a lot talking about, what he's doing, how he's preparing. From what I'm gathering is that he's just trying to work and fly under the radar, because he knows that a lot of people, if not everybody in this town, is doubting his ability to play. But Treylon Burks, with his connection, he believes in the upside of Malik Willis, and he thinks throughout this offseason, the improvements that he's done, they've been through their rookie season. They know what to expect. There's not going to be a lot of surprises going into this year, and Treylon Burks likes what Malik Willis has to offer. He says he's still up in the air about Will Levis. He hasn't got to meet him. He hasn't got to throw with him, and that there is room to change his opinion about that.
Sure.
But as of right now, He is a believer, and he is buying into Malik Willis.
I do like that update, so I appreciate you sharing. I think that is pivotal. And now the thing that I think, the way I process it with that is, it makes sense. So I'm sure that the type of players that they both are, I think that they suit each other well. I mean, you see – I personally believe the way that Malik had to carry himself last year, it was difficult. He gets drafted. He's doubted. He does get to play in some games. At the same time, too, when he's playing in these games, we didn't think he would even get to this point. So the fact that he performed the way that he did. Now, the Titans were down at the time. It was not a typical Titans team that you're going to see. So that was the one thing for me. I was on vacation when he started that game against the Chiefs, and I sat and watched the entire game. And I think when you were saying that, that was the first thing that came to mind for me, because he needs to carry that confidence that he had in that game. And if that's the case, and he's working with perhaps one of the biggest, if not the biggest, X factor on offense right now in a Treylon Burks, that's huge. And so I know all this week we've talked about Titans need to get some guys. Titans need this. Titans need that. Yeah, we know. So, I mean, it's the off season. That's just the way that it goes. But I also think that is going to be a huge storyline. And I think that's something to keep an eye on. So if he prefers Malik Willis as of now, I think that's a good thing to say as of now, then I'd like to see those connections either at practice. Now, preseason don't matter too much, but I'd like to see that connection pop off a little. Now, Treylon, I don't know how much he would play then. Doesn't matter. Like I said, preseason. I'd still like to see it personally because I like to see it to believe it. But I think that's an interesting combination. So I wonder if he likes how he throws the ball to him. Like, I'm thinking of different little things now, but I like that little update.
You gotta see it from this perspective. And it's that, you know, when it comes to the traits, his mobility, his arm strength, I mean, Malik Willis was kind of one of those that were blowing people away at his pro day and at the NFL Combine last year.
He played at Western, actually. He played against Western, and when I was watching him, when he got drafted by the Titans, I went back to that game, and that was the first game that I watched. Now
it was the season before, wasn't it?
The season, yes, correct. But I still went back and watched it. So, yeah. But yes.
I paid more attention to him when he was more of a draft prospect and tried to catch, you know, whatever Liberty game that I possibly could.
Sorry to cut you off,
and
but yes.
You're fine. And I watched a particular game because I was like, okay, these are going to be two big-time quarterback prospects that are going into the year. And that was when Liberty went and played Ole Miss. Now, obviously, there is a huge talent discrepancy between Ole Miss and Liberty. But what I saw there was when Malik is under pressure that he tends to make rash decisions and takes unneeded sacks, sometimes doesn't throw the ball away as quickly as he needs to be. But the one thing that his trainer, like I said, who DM'd Michelle and I, his name is Sean McEvoy. McAvoy?
Is it? Yeah, that sounds about right.
McAvoy?
Sean, I think that's it. Sean McAvoy. Sorry. Not having a good morning pronouncing things today. But
it's hard.
With that being said, you know, he's told me that what they've worked on this offseason is for Malik Willis to be more of a pro style. And he used the comparison of, at times, instead of being more like the Malik Willis at Liberty, he needs to play more like a Logan Woodside and to sit back there, not look to run so quickly, go through your progressions, and make the pass that is appropriate for the defense that's in front of you. If it's a check down that gets 2 or 3 yards, so be it. That's what's there. But if not, you know, make the pass and make the correct read. And I think that instead of relying on his athleticism, because in some of the games we watched him play for the Titans this year, he seemed a little bit slower than what people had expected, and that's just because of the speed of the NFL. So I think for him flying under the radar, you know, them drafting Will Levis, and, you know, Will Levis getting a lot of the hype and everybody's talking about when he's going to play, this could play in well for Malik Willis. And for me, I don't expect much from him. I don't expect him to compete with Tannehill and Levis. But with some of this information that I'm getting, I'm going to keep an open mind, even though I am still not a believer in Malik Willis.
I certainly would. And I think, you know, I'm behind the glass like Frazier is, but I always think to myself when I hear a lot of this conversation about we've got Levis, and you know, Willie said yesterday, he's like, it's me and Derek, we're going to take a break from Will Levis, and I loved that. But I think it's important to consider the whole story. Malik is part of the whole story for me, and I would like to give him more of a shot, and I have not tried to leave him out of the question mark because it's a good problem to have. And the other thing, too, that I brought up earlier this week, and I think I mentioned it with Michelle, you know, having the three quarterback rule come back, that would be great. Now,
will it happen?
We don't know definitively if that's going to happen or not, but that would really benefit the Titans. And it would not just benefit the Titans, it would benefit the whole NFL. But that would be a good problem to have, Junie. And Malik, I think, is more than capable of shining under the right situation. And now, like you said, he needs to be more of a pro and play that pro style. When he has the chance to execute that, I think we'll get to decide then.
I will say, and you touched on this earlier, watching Will Levis and Malik Willis get the opportunity to throw to some of these guys in training camp is going to be pivotal. But
yes,
the fact that you have, you know, two quarterbacks, because last year preseason was exciting just for the fact that we got to watch Malik Willis in a Titans uniform,
yep,
with as high of a prospect as he was coming in. But now that you have Malik Willis going into year two, really trying to refine his game to move towards the NFL style of play, and then you got Will Levis and both of them competing for that initial backup job, this preseason is going to be very interesting for the Tennessee Titans. But coming up next, we want to get into the starter for the Tennessee Titans. Ryan Tannehill will absolutely be the starter going into week one against the New Orleans Saints. I've been hearing a lot of things comparing where does Tannehill rank around the NFL. Is Ryan Tannehill overvalued or undervalued? We are going to get into that next. You are listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Michelle and Junie. Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle Knezevic today. We teased it before the break. Is Ryan Tannehill overvalued or undervalued? And I think my answer is going to kind of surprise you. I think when it comes to the national media, you know, because I was kind of diving into this, and I looked at NFL.com, ESPN, Fox Sports. They all have their own little QB rankings. And when I look at the national outlets, Tannehill is pretty much ranked in the bottom third and bottom, often sometimes fourth, like in like the 25, 26 range on the national level. But then when I go to the local side of things, and I listen to people on our station, and I listen to some of the writers, and I listen to TD. Sometimes I think Tannehill gets a little overvalued. I think here locally, people kind of appreciate Ryan Tannehill a little too much, and I think the national media doesn't give him his credit where credit is due. So
sure.
I wanted to go through this exercise. You know, you and Michelle did it. Jared did it. I want to talk about, you know, certain quarterbacks that you think are better than Ryan Tannehill or worse than Ryan Tannehill. So I'm going to leave out Mahomes, Burrow, Hurts, Allen, Herbert,
okay,
Rodgers.
Yes. Leave out all the redundant
Big guys that we all know. He's not better than Rodgers, Herbert, or none of them. So let's start with this one.
Okay.
Lamar Jackson.
I would take – why is this harder for me? No, I don't know why it is. I would probably take Lamar over Tannehill.
I see. I'm a bit more critical of Lamar, but I would still go with Lamar.
I think Lamar. Yeah.
Okay. In the division, okay. Trevor Lawrence,
Tannehill.
What?
Tannehill.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You would take Ryan Tannehill this season over Trevor Lawrence.
Look, I'm not saying that Trevor Lawrence and we've had this conversation, and I may have even picked Tannehill the other day too. Maybe not. I may contradict myself, but because I've had more time to think about what Michelle and I said. So I think when you look at what he's done with the team, now look, the overall body of work that Lawrence has, I think, is fine at the very beginning of his entire career. But I think right now, just the way that now,
I still don't think right now
in the situation,
there's no way
in the situation that they have, you don't know what he could possibly be this year for the Titans.
Trevor Lawrence is one of the best quarterback prospects that have come out. And again, you can look towards his rookie year when they had Urban Meyer. I throw that out of the window.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Last year they started off, he had just about average league numbers. But when that second half of the season hit, he was a top five quarterback towards the tail end of the season.
Well,
and for him, as big of a prospect as he is, I expect him to take another jump. They get Calvin Ridley back from his suspension. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to blow up. I particularly don't look at this like it's not even close. It's not even close, the upside that Trevor Lawrence has, the talent that Lawrence has, the prospect that he was coming in, and the way he showed out at the end of last season. For me, it's not even close.
So, I do, like, Junie, I do agree with you, but it's just the feeling I have for the season.
Okay.
I would rather have Tannehill, but I like Trevor. Trevor is definitely – now, you had that take about him being real good after the bye week. I think he was the best quarterback in the NFL at the time after his bye. I really think he was.
He put up astronomical numbers. But let's get to some more QBs here. Dak Prescott.
Dak.
See, I would take Tannehill.
Why would you? Okay, so they're okay.
I think Dak, you know, he missed, what was it, 6 games last year, and he still led the league in interceptions.
Mm.
And he had a stacked Cowboys team last year on defense and on offense. And he always seems to find a way to mess it up. I would rather go with the consistency of Ryan Tannehill. You know, Tannehill obviously had the 3-pick game against the Bengals. But with that being said, I would still rather go with Tannehill over Dak. I'm not a Dak Prescott guy.
Look. Okay. I think that's warranted. And I think the way that Dak plays as a complete guy, I'm still always going to go back to how Chase feels about it.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Look, they play
Homer.
See? But look, I think Dak is more than capable of being a better playoff quarterback than Tannehill, and I would rather go to Dak, who is more than capable of leading his offense. I think he's very smart. I think he's someone that he has fit the bill to what the Cowboys have asked out of him. Now, the Cowboys have been the Cowboys. Like, Chase's little punchline gets me thinking they just choke all the time.
Listen, but I like Dak. I think he's a great guy. I love his story. I love, you know, he was Walter Payton Man of the Year. He does a lot of good stuff, you know, for charities around Dallas, his hometown, his college town, all that stuff. He's a great guy.
Yes.
Not taking him on
so,
the field.
So, fun fact really quick, I also ran into him at a Preds game after his rookie season.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Okay, here's another one, and I think this is a good conversation. Kirk Cousins.
Ooh, finally. I was waiting on this question, actually. Derek Mason and I talked about this yesterday.
Okay.
Because he came in the middle of our conversation, and I had to think a little more about it. So the other day, I had strongly gone with Tannehill because Tannehill was a more proven asset in the NFL. But
has he?
But okay, so I think we're gonna agree on this.
Okay.
I think I'd take Kirk Cousins.
I would take Kirk Cousins as well. I think he's just a better passer of the football. And again, that might have to do that he has had really good receivers in Minnesota. But, you know, you just don't see Ryan Tannehill lighting teams up. When Kirk Cousins is on,
I like his
accuracy. And it's not prime time.
Yeah.
I mean Kirk lights it up.
Yeah,
and for Tannehill, you know, the whole argument about, oh, well, Tannehill led the Titans to the AFC Championship.
Sure.
Like, I hate that argument. Because he didn't throw for 100 yards in any of those wins against Baltimore and New England. And Derrick Henry was having a historic all-time run for a running back that was basically putting a team on his back, literally, with the amount of people that were trying to tackle him at that time. and leading them to the AFC Championship.
I think
Kirk, you're a Saints fan. You watch Kirk Cousins in the plays he made to beat Drew Brees and that team.
Okay,
I thought there was no way. I thought there was no way that Kirk Cousins and the Vikings would go in and beat Drew Brees in New Orleans, and they did. And they did it pretty emphatically.
It's still P.I. Still P.I.
That's not the same. That was the Rams game.
I know. I'm still so – that's just – but the whole performance from Kirk the following season just – it just irks me the wrong way.
Okay, here's another one. Here's another one. And I think this one is a bit more interesting.
Okay.
Jared Goff.
Okay, we did touch on this. We didn't get to it for as long, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think I would rather take Tannehill because Jared Goff, he was drafted, had a lot of hype. I think he kind of let his just expectations get to him early on, and he also – you know, he was with the Rams. He played really well with them. I think he carried that team very well. But at the end of the day, too, when I think about what he's done, not completely what he did this past season, I thought he did fine with the Lions. Don't get me wrong. I think the Lions are set up for success. I think they'll have a phenomenal season this year. It'll be a big step in the right direction. As I know, Joe Rexford always holds up his mug at the end of every stream that he has at home. But look, I would rather take Tannehill still just because of the way that Tannehill approaches the game. Goff is just more of a good pocket passer, Junie. And I think when he's got the weapons, he can do things. I think he's been a fun guy to watch. But sometimes I ask myself in this question, too, would I take him in fantasy just to kind of help me out? I think I'd rather take Tannehill just because of what he's capable of doing in a game.
The Lions had one of the best offenses in the league last year, especially in the second half of the year.
Yeah.
I was never really a big Goff guy, but the fact that of what he's done in Detroit and the expectations that they have going into this season, I mean, they're the favorites to win the division, according to Vegas. And they've only gotten better.
Yeah.
I like Jared Goff at this stage. You know, if we're talking a few years ago, I would have went with Tannehill. But with the last 2 years on how it's went for Ryan Tannehill and the way Jared Goff played last year, I'm going with Goff. Like, Goff, his stock is going up.
Mm-hmm.
Tannehill currently is going down, and he's in jeopardy of losing his job with a slow start with the Titans this year. So give me Jared Goff. So, we could definitely get into a lot more.
Last one's a big toss-up for me, I think.
But the last one, and this one was making headways, and we'll get into this before we go into break, is Justin Fields.
Yes, yes. So you want to dive into this before break, or do you want to go into the next segment?
Let's get really quick. All right. Let's fire it off.
I would rather take Justin Fields.
I'm taking Justin Fields as well, and I don't think that's too hot of a take.
No.
Just because his rookie year, the surrounding cast around him was rough. Not a lot of receivers, really bad offensive line. He has the upside, and I think they've done a ton with getting him receiving help. You know, the trade with DJ Moore, they went in free agency and got offensive linemen, drafted offensive linemen. I really like what the Bears have done this offseason, and I think Justin Fields might take a really big leap.
Do you think there's capability that at some point, obviously later on in his NFL career, do you think he leads the NFL in – career last like game winning drives? Because I think he could do that.
Who are you talking about? Justin Fields. I don't know about his clutchness yet. There was a couple games last year where he came up a bit short. Again, has to do a little bit with the surrounding cast.
I need to
see more of that. But this year, you know, just projecting of what I believe is going to happen, not what's happened in the past.
Sure,
we're talking about what we think is going to happen.
Yep.
I think Justin Fields is going to take another step, and I think Tannehill, with his age, the cast around him, I see Justin Fields having a much better season than Ryan Tannehill this year. But we are going to get into the Titans and things that they need for this season to go well. A lot of people are projecting the Titans to be one of the worst teams, having one of the worst rosters. We're going to talk about the top 10 things the Titans need to go right this offseason in order for them to have the most successful season. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Michelle and Junie. Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle Knezovic. We were just talking about Ryan Tannehill compared to other starting quarterbacks and where he matches up. And Nick, you had pointed out to me that you got a text on your personal text line.
Yes, I did.
In response.
Yes, I actually have some more support, and it's not just about the Predators. So on my personal text line, it's, who cares? Lawrence is a prospect. Josh Rosen was a great prospect, too. Tannehill over Lawrence. Upside is just hope.
Oh, my God. Who was that?
Caroline Fenton.
Caroline! Caroline! No! Not you, too!
Yep.
Listen. She brought up Josh Rosen, number one, and again.
It's an example.
The level of being an elite prospect between Josh Rosen and Trevor Lawrence is night and day. Trevor Lawrence is up there with your Andrew Lux, your Peyton Mannings. He had that much hype when he came into the NFL.
He did.
Josh Rosen, people were questioning on whether or not he actually wanted to play in the NFL during his draft process. He only got drafted because of what he did at UCLA. I was never high on Josh Rosen. But when you look at Trevor Lawrence and what he did in the tail end of last year, mm-hmm. and especially in the playoff game, when you throw four picks in the first half and then you can get over that, move past that, and then lead your team after being down 27-0 and come back and win – that shows a lot of guts.
So I did bring that up when Michelle and I talked about it.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, that's a proven quality. But here's the thing. The one caveat that I had with that one situation is this. He put himself in the hole. He had to get himself out of it. His defense had the help. He had to turn it around. They collectively as a team had to work together toward it too. It was not just him winning that game. It was not. Now, at the end of the day, it looks to be like those mistakes are going to be a big learning factor for him, and they are. But for me, I got to see him make those not make those mistakes, and I need to see a little more out of him this year to lead this team.
And I understand that. Okay, like the first half of the playoff was rough, but yes. In the second half of the season, he had a 15-1 or 15-2 TD to interception ratio.
He
was also, I think he led the NFL in QB rating.
Probably.
And again, this was year two,
yes.
right? So going into year three, and especially in year three with Doug Peterson, a Super Bowl winning coach, an adult, and not Urban Meyer, who's going to college bars and putting his hands where they're not supposed to be. I like Trevor Lawrence, and I think that you're going to see him have a breakout season and pick up just where he left off last year. But either way, that is not what we're talking about in this segment. We are getting into the top 10 things the Titans need to get right in order for this season to be a success. You wanted to say something.
Number one,
this offensive line has to find a way to come together.
Yes.
Okay, I think it was a lot of patchwork, a lot of unproven guys. I don't like, and I mentioned this, and people were trying to rip me about it, but I said going into last season, the Titans' offensive line was better.
Yeah, the trenches.
Now again, with the Ben Jones, the Nate Davis injury, the Taylor Lewan injury, that whole narrative changed, okay? But with the guys they went out and got, the Brunskill, moving Aaron Brewer to center, which is unproven. Andre Dillard, who you know couldn't beat out a guy that was drafted in the same draft as him, that was a much later round pick. These guys are unproven, and I really need to see the combination of how they're going to fill it out. Where is Skoronski going to play? Is he going to play tackle? Is he going to play guard? If they can come together, that is the number one most important thing this season.
I agree with you.
Number two, how will Harold Landry play coming off the ACL.
Ooh.
I think this is something that not a lot of people are talking about. You know, they're saying he's healthy, he looks great. They said the same thing about Bud Dupree.
Yes, they did. Okay.
And Bud Dupree was not the same player. He was a double-digit, he got double-digit sacks in back-to-back seasons, and then eventually, with the injury, it really slowed him down. And look where he is now. He's on a year-to-year contract.
So
he's not the same player.
The biggest thing that I can offer as a former athlete is having that surgery. It's no easy task. You're not going to be the same.
Oh no,
you are not going to be the same. You and I understand that. But at the same given point in time, if he can't accommodate as a professional to stand up for himself and help this defense out,
pass rusher, in my opinion, is the most key position on the defense.
Oh yeah,
when you can disrupt the quarterback, which we saw Harold Landry do with his 12 sack campaign in 2021. That was really important to that defense and took that defense to another level. Mm-hmm. If he is not the same, and Arden Key, who was a backup last year in Jacksonville, doesn't come in and make a huge impact, this front seven could be in trouble when that is supposed to be the strength of this team.
Yes.
So, number three, Treylon Burks has to make a huge step and become the number one receiver he was drafted to be. This is what everybody's talking about. We don't have to go into a ton of detail about this.
Nope.
But with as depleted as this wide receiver room is and how underwhelming it is going into the season, Treylon Burks has to take that step, and by the look of things, he's working to do it, but we still got to see it go out on the field.
Exactly.
Number four, something that I find that not a lot of people are talking about and is very underrated, is Derrick Henry can't lose another step. Last year, the home run runs were not really there. And it seemed he was still an elite running back. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he finished second in rushing. He's still a perennial top five running back. But in the years prior, in 2021 before his injury, in 2020 when he rushed for 2,000 yards, in 19 when he led the Titans to the AFC Championship, he was just up and beyond, overly dominant. It wasn't even a question. This guy is the best running back in the NFL. Now, it's kind of a debate between, you know, is he still that elite level? He's getting into his 30s. You know, he just got injured. Every offseason, you still have to work and build up your body. How will Derrick Henry play this year? Can he still be that consistent 1,500 yards, 10-plus touchdowns, and be a guy that you can rely on throughout the season? I think that is something that not many people are talking about and that could have a huge impact if he's takes a slight step back.
Completely agree with you.
Number five, injuries have to be dialed back significantly from the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they had to use maybe 85, 86 players this past year. The year before that, they set an NFL record with 91 total players coming in and out of the lineup, and it just flat out. I mean, it's derailed the season. Last season, and they lost seven in a row. This team has got to stay healthy, and they cannot afford to lose some of the key players that they have the past 2 years, because the way this roster is set up, everything needs to go right for this team for them to have an opportunity to make the playoffs. And if injuries derail them again, the coaching staff, the training staff, they have to look in the mirror and they have to find, like, what are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
Because this is just not sustainable with the rate of injuries that have been afflicting this team.
And they fired Haas.
They fired Haas.
Yep, Derek made a whole stink about that.
I mean, I heard Derek talk about that. If they fired him the way that it kind of came out like it did, it's kind of messed up. But
anyway.
All right, number six. Kyle Phillips has to be the number two and stay healthy.
What if he's
this year.
Three?
I don't think the Titans see it that way.
Okay.
I think the Titans see his potential. I think they saw what he did in training camp last year and what he did in week one against the Giants. This guy is an elite route runner. He is the perfect player to throw into the slot, and I think that they are really banking on him to be the number two to Treylon Burks. And with what I saw personally, I was like, this is a good ball player, and he has to put on a little bit more weight, the healthy kind of weight. He has to really adapt to the physicality of the NFL game in order for him to be successful.
Grab that ball, too.
And from what I've heard and what I've seen, I think that he has put on a little bit of weight, and hopefully that he can stay healthy and continue to progress and be that number two that the Titans were hoping that he would be last year. So, number seven, the secondary cannot be ranked 32nd in the league. And this also kind of ties into the whole injury aspect of things.
Easier said than done, but yes.
Very, very much so. But, you know, I look at this team, and I look at a guy like Roger McCreary. There were some times last season that he looked excellent,
mm-hmm.
and he made some great plays. But there were other times that he made some huge lapses and let the receivers get behind him and allowed mm-hmm. big plays to happen. I also look at Christian Fulton. Mm-hmm. You know, Christian Fulton got called out by Mike Vrabel for not staying healthy, the small tissue injuries that he's been dealing with. He's on a contract year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to step up and play to the level that we've seen him because we've seen him have some really good games and lock down some really good receivers. So the secondary cannot be last in the league. They got to be somewhere towards the middle of the pack and really help bolster this defense with the really good front seven that we know that they have. Number eight, Chigakonkwo has to live up to the hype. Everybody's trying to compare him to Delanie Walker. We've seen what he did. We were begging them to get him more involved last year, and even then, with the a limited amount of reps that he got towards the beginning of the season, you know, he still was right up there with the leading receivers on the team last year. So Chig has got to live up to the hype. Number nine, inside linebackers have to play well to continue to have elite run defense success. The loss of David Long Jr. and Zach Cunningham, who are both really good run stuffers there in the middle at the linebacker position, I think is going to be huge. The fact that they replaced him with Azeez Al-Shaair, and then you're also talking about Monty Rice, who hasn't really been able to stay healthy as a third-round pick from a few years ago. I feel like that those acquisitions are a bit underwhelming, mm-hmm. and I think the loss of some of these guys, although Cunningham couldn't stay healthy, although David Long, you know, was dealing with the soft tissue injuries, you know, these inside linebackers are a big part of stuffing the run. I feel like that is important.
Mm-hmm.
And my last point, number 10, Will Levis has to push Ryan Tannehill in camp. I think if this is a legit controversy in camp, that it's going to get the best out of both of them. If Will Levis is right there with Tannehill and Tannehill is continuously trying to step up his game, the better Tannehill is, the better this team will be. If Tannehill earns it and is able to keep his job, especially with how tough the schedule is up until the bye week, those first six games, that will be better for the Titans in the long haul rather than moving to Levis just for this season. Maybe not for the future. You know, maybe Levis coming in after the bye would be better for years to come if he is the guy.
Sure.
But for this season alone, if Levis pushes Tannehill, then I think that that's going to be good for the playoff chances for the Tennessee Titans this season.
Okay.
Keezer, before we go to break, your thoughts.
I like it. I think those are 10 big key things. You know, to every broadcast that you hear keys to success, and I like them. I think that's what you need to have. And, Junie, those are fair expectations. And I think for any fan that needs a template for what the Titans fans need to look at, that's perfect.
Absolutely. So we are going to put a bow on things coming up next. We're going to talk about both game threes in the NBA, game twos in the NHL, and of course, Nick Frazier with his excellent picking of Nashville SC parlays. Make some money. Tune in next as we put a bow on things. You're listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. One smart cookie, the bet that smacks rookies. My stock's on top, your checks bounce while mine's booking. Welcome back into Michelle and Junie.
Here comes the money.
Oh, dear.
Here we go. Money talk.
Computer has a mind of its own today.
Oh, man. It just wants us to listen to all the tunes. But again, you're listening to Michelle and Judy here on 102.5, 106.3 in The Game. We're going to put a bow on things. Nick Keyser in for Michelle Knezevic. We're going to go through both game threes of the NBA today and tomorrow in both game twos of the NHL as well and wrap up with Frazier's NSC parlay that just seems to be winning weekly. I know you didn't get it last week, but still.
Yeah, spoke a little too soon on that one last
week. Everybody misses a shot, so Frazier, you have a bunch of room to miss here. So with all the ones you've gotten. So let's start with game three tonight. Lakers -5.5 in LA against the Nuggets. I'm going to go with the Lakers, but I'm going to take the Nuggets with the points. I think it's a really close game, but I think that the Lakers pull through in the end at home. Desperation will sit in. They will win.
Give me Denver. And also
– Denver to win?
Yes.
Oh.
And I like doing these two really quick. Give me Jokic, the Joker, going over 28.5 points.
I think that's an easy bet. Okay, Frazier. Lakers Nuggets. Lakers favored by 5.5.
I will be taking the Denver Nuggets at 5.5 and taking Jokic to get a triple-double at -150.
Ooh, okay.
Okay,
on the
triple-double.
I like that. Like I said, Lakers money line, Nuggets with the points. Okay, game three tomorrow. Celtics travel to the Heat, and the Celtics are favored, according to Superbook Sports, by 3.5 points. I am taking the Celtics in this game. I think desperation will set in. I think they want to give them a chance, and they know if they go down 0-3, that is an insurmountable lead that they will not be able to come back on. So give me the Celtics out of desperation to win and cover.
So they will split, but I'm gonna take the Heat in game three, then Boston will take game four.
All right, so you are not giving Boston a semblance of a chance to win the series. Frazier, Celtics Heat.
Give me Heat money line +132 where I have it. And I just think the sweep's going to happen. I'm going to say it. I think the sweep is going to happen.
You think get the brooms out.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm headed to Walmart after this.
Spring cleaning.
All righty. Okay, let's go into game two in the NHL tonight. The Hurricanes are -1.5 versus the Panthers after their 4 overtime. It was an awesome game.
It was an affair.
It was a great game.
So long.
But give me the Canes, and give me the Canes with the points. I see them winning like 5-2, 4-2. I think they come out firing. I think they were embarrassed to lose in front of their home crowd. The way that it happened, especially with all the chances and all the overtimes that they went through, give me the Canes.
Okay. I will say give me the Canes too, and a player prop that I pulled up that I think would be, if you want to get deep into it, give me Seth Jarvis +250 as an anytime goal scorer. I like Seth Jarvis. He has been on fire for them so far this postseason.
Okay, Frazier, how are we feeling about Canes Panthers?
I like the over 5.5. It just speaks to me. It's just saying, hey, there's going to be a lot of goals. Take it. So I'm going to advise that.
So that was an important point, because I think it was either Robbie and Rexler, or it was either you and Michelle the other day, that they said that this game could go one or two ways.
Mm-hmm.
It could either be a scoring affair with how exhausted the goalies are, or the skaters are going to be exhausted, and they're not going to put up a lot of points.
I think it was me. I said, I don't think we're going to see a high-scoring game. I really do not think we will see that.
I see like a 2-1, maybe a 3-2, just to get slightly on the under. I would take the under. I think their legs are going to be gassed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair.
Because
I mean,
in a sense, they played more than two games.
Yeah, there was one guy that skated 8 miles, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yep.
8 miles?
Yes.
That is, oh.
I believe that was Brandon Montour that skated that.
Bless his soul. Okay, all right, okay. After last night, Golden Knights are up 1-0 against the Dallas Stars. They're still playing in Vegas. Golden Knights are a 1.5 favorite over the Dallas Stars. Give me the Stars in this game. They're at least going to cover. I think that they win outright. I like what you said, Nick. I think goaltending-wise, defensively-wise, they're really aggressive. I think the game kind of got stolen from them in the matchup last night. So give me the Stars to even up the series and head back to Dallas 1-1.
It'll be under 5.5. I'll say that. And I will also be taking the Dallas Stars in this game.
Okay.
I will be taking the Vegas Golden Knights on the money line, and on top of that, I will take over 5.5.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. You're feeling some high scoring hockey this weekend, Frazier.
Yeah. Playoffs. I just feel like it's going to be a lot of scoring and everything. So let's do it.
Okay. And the way we wrap up every single show, Frazier gives his Nashville SC parlay. And believe me, I have already missed out on a grand's worth of money because I have not listened to him. So Frazier, give the people what they want. Give them the money.
Yes.
What is your parlay this week?
I am going to give a little stat real quick, and then we're punched on time, but Nashville SC is currently doing some history right now. They have the least conceded goals in the MLS. They're currently at 8, sit at the bottom of the table. That's a good thing to have. The team that leads the league in that is Charlotte, who they play today. So, and they lead it with 23. So
Joe has a big game tonight.
Exactly. So I'm taking Nashville SC on the double chance. It's -210, and that goes along with the parlay. I also also have Hany Mukhtar to get two shots on goal. Nashville SC on the corner spread, plus one. My lovely little pick there. Teal Burnberry to get one or more shots on target, and Nashville SC to have six or more shots on target. Put 25 on it, that gets you 473, or just put 10 on it, wins you 189.
That's dinner and a movie right there, fellas. Go put some money on Nashville SC. It doesn't matter. He goes to every game. He covers the team religiously. Put some money on the NSC parlay. That is all we got for today. Keezer, great work filling in for Michelle. As always, Frazier, excellent work. We had a great show here. You have been listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.